Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line now from Southern California, Chris Pinto. And Chris is in the studio. We've been spending most of the day filming some footage for his new upcoming video in the Megiddo, the March to Armageddon series. But we carry, and we have for some time, the first film in the series. It's about 2 hours in length. It's called Megiddo, the March to Armageddon. And it's a fascinating program trying to tie together what's happening politically and historically with the scriptures and the prophecies of the that were written thousands of years ago. And in the first film, which we carry and which we've put out many hundreds of them, why he goes into the prophecies of Nostradamus and of Edgar Cayce, and simply pointing out that these were not real prophets. They guessed pretty well on some things, but a true prophet of God, why he gets 100%, because God doesn't make any mistakes. Men make mistakes, and lots of people are out there pretending that they're prophets, but when the rubber meets the road, why, they're going to make serious errors, whereas God's prophets never error. And what God says is going to come to pass does come to pass. Isn't that true, Chris?
That's absolutely right, Dr. Stan. In fact, we were talking about it earlier. I had gotten into a discussion. We had a caller earlier this week call our office, and she had started to watch Megiddo. And in Megiddo, we talk about Edgar Cayce. We talk about Nostradamus. But then we talk about a trend that's been going on in the churches now for a number of years, and it's a lot of these newer prophets that have come out, and they're involved in various church movements and whatnot. And she was watching Megiddo, and she got about 20-some minutes into it, and she saw one of her favorite prophets listed there, and we quoted this guy and exposed that what he's teaching is contrary to what the Bible very clearly says about prophecy. And she got upset and said she stopped watching the documentary, shut it off. She and her husband were upset and whatnot. But I was talking to her about it and reminded her that I was only quoting this guy, and his name is Rick Joyner. He's got a ministry out in North Carolina. But he teaches, and he's got a prophecy school that teaches based upon the principle that modern prophets have a certain percentage of accuracy and a certain percentage of error. And the quote, roughly, is he quotes and says that, you know, he's got prophets that are, you know, 50% accurate, some are 30% accurate, some are 60, and so on. And that
you could almost do that well flipping a coin.
Right, that's exactly it. And but the biblical role model that we're given in the Bible, God says very clearly that the way that you recognize what God has spoken is that if a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord and that which he declares does not come about or come true, God says that is the word which the Lord has not spoken. And he says the prophet has spoken it presumptuously. You shall not be afraid of him. In other words, you shall not fear him as a prophet of God or allow him to direct your life in any way. I've read stories for years now about Christians, I think quite often sincere Christians, who have had their lives turned upside down because of some of these guys, men and women who have gotten married because somebody who claimed that they were a prophet said, you know, basically, thus says the Lord, you two should get married, and they've gotten married, and then 10 or 15 years into a marriage, felt completely detached and, you know, end up in a disastrous divorce or something. People who have changed their lives, you know, left their homes and moved across country because some prophet said that God told them to do it, or something like that, and end up in catastrophic results as because of it. And so the Bible warns us that we should test the spirits whether or not they be from God. The Bible says prove all things, and that we ought to adhere very closely to what God says in the Scriptures. And a lot of these modern prophets that are really, they're no different than fortune tellers or, you know, guys like Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce, because they're just guessing. And sometimes the things that they say are somewhat accurate. But if you can't trust a word from God 100% of the time, I mean, the nature of prophecy over and over and over again in the Bible, God says, when he declares things, he says, when you see this thing come to pass, then ye shall know that I am the Lord. Okay, then we can know that we can trust God because God has declared it, and God always brings his word to pass.
Well, I think some of these people do get a message. I think it may very well come from the dark side, and sometimes it's accurate and sometimes it isn't. I think Lucifer has a plan for the world. I think God has a plan for the world. I think that God can thwart Lucifer's plan any time he wants to. I think that sometimes these people do get some supernatural revelation, but if it's coming from the wrong side, you don't want to have anything to do with them. And apropos of what you were saying, just about 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago, I had a wonderful woman call me, and she told me that there was this man who was getting constant visions from God, and he was calling them regularly because they live not too far from where I am, here adjacent to Monterey Bay. And he had this vision. God had told him that there was going to be a great earthquake, and the coastline of California was going to fall into the ocean between the 4th and the 10th of April. Now, she was calling me about 10 days before that, and really frightened to death. And this man was calling her every day from the east to say that God had told him to call her, to tell her. She didn't even know this fellow, but perhaps met him once time, and she called me rather frantic. They didn't know what to do. And I just told them that I didn't believe it was going to happen. I knew a little bit about the associations of this so-called prophet, and I just reassured her that I wasn't moving and she shouldn't either. And then I suggested with tongue in cheek that if you really think it's going to happen, you sell everything and send the proceeds to us. And then I said, but please don't do that. You stay right where you are. And of course, the 10th of April has come and gone, and we're still here. But there are people out there, maybe they're well-meaning people. I assume that this man had nothing to gain, but he had gotten a false message from a false god. Mm-hmm. And he was proposing this, and I think we have to be very, very careful of the people who say, God told me to tell you this. Well, I don't know why, if God wants to tell me something, he's not going to bring this upon me. He doesn't have to go to somebody else. I hope I'm close enough to him, he'll come directly to me. And I think that there are certain branches of Christendom where people have this idea that they get a word from God and they're going to tell people. And to date, I've never seen one of these come through, you know, with anything but great tragedy. So anyway, in your video, why you talk about Nostradamus, you talk about Edgar Cayce, and I really believe that Edgar Cayce did have supernatural power. Certainly the records that have been kept show he did, but I don't think that power came from the God that I worship. I think it came from the dark side, and may very well be true as far as some of Nostradamus' predictions, which may or may not have come to pass. But certainly the only person who really knows what the future holds is the Lord who we worship. And you bring this out beautifully in your film, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon. And this is why Chris is with us tonight. We're going to be talking about that. And if you've seen the video out across America, or you have a question for Chris, well, give us a call right now. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. I think it's a fascinating video. Chris had just sent it to us. I don't know why he picked us of all the people, but we were one of the first people he sent the video to. And that weekend, first of all, I should say that please don't send me videos, because we get so many videos from so many people that, quite frankly, I can't watch most of them. But for one reason, well, I think it was because they had a very interesting box cover, and I didn't know who Chris Minter was. I was intrigued by the title, and I just said, honey, let's go ahead and watch this evening, on Saturday evening. And we started to watch it, and after about an hour, I said, "Honey, are you, would you like to have some dinner?" And my wife said, "We're not going to stop for dinner. We're going to see this whole video through, because it was that compelling. It really drew you into it. The music is great. The graphics are great. The interviews are great. And, of course, some of my favorite people, David Bay, David Hunt, Carol Matriciana, William Stell, an excellent group of people telling parts and parcel of the story. How did you ever get all those people together, Chris?
You know, I started out, and these were the people that I was studying from as I was learning about these things, and I was reading their books and watching their videos and so on, and reading various articles from them online. Then as I started thinking about putting Megiddo together, I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could somehow or other assemble all of these guys and have them coming in and out like you see in documentaries. And who better than, the guys who have been researching this stuff for often upwards to, 40 or 50 years, and in some cases, like with Dave Hunt. So I just started writing letters and, wrote a letter. I think Dave Hunt was the first to respond, and responded very quickly. In fact, the Brilliant Call called me, and I talked to the secretary there, and she asked me what the project was about, and I told her, and she said, "Well, this sounds like something that Dave might be interested in." And so we talked a little bit more, and she said, "Okay, well, listen, I'll run this past Dave, and I'll get back to you." So we hung up, and I thought, well, maybe I'll hear from him in a week or two or something. About 20 minutes later, the phone rang, and it was her again, and she said, "Okay, great. We'll meet you in 3 weeks." Dave's going out of the country. So we had to scramble and put things together and get up to Bend, Oregon to meet with him. And while I was there, I had a chance to meet with Tom McMahon as well, who also appears in the series. And they did a great job. And it just went that way. A little bit of time, I would pray about it and ask God, who he wanted me to meet with. And there were a number of people I contacted that, never responded or else were unavailable for one reason or another. But we got a pretty great collection of witnesses, I think, for the series.
I think you did as well. And I've found in what I have done and some of the footage I've actually had shot in motion picture studios and certainly in the interviews that I do, that nice people who really love the Lord, are more than willing to share their views and, without any thought of compensation. I know in 1980, we actually were putting together a film, which has never been completed, but we actually got people from all over America, and most of them, did not ask for any compensation other than I would pay their way back to Greenville, South Carolina. One or two, yes, they wanted to be paid, and we had the funds to pay them, but most of them, if we would just provide them with a motel and provide them with meals, why, they were happy to come and to share their knowledge. And I really have always appreciated these people and their generosity, and one day we're going to finish that film. But anyway, let's get back to your film. It's called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, and it is basically the story of the great wars of the last century. A lot of great footage in there depicting the First World War and the Second World War, but tying this in not only to history, but the prophecies that had been laid out, and not necessarily biblical prophecies, but certain plans of the occultists who really want war. And if you study the First and Second World War, you can only come to one conclusion, and that is somebody wanted as much death and destruction as was humanly or perhaps inhumanly possible. Would you like to pick up on that story of this concept that laid out back in the 1870s by a couple of Lucifer's disciples, a man named Mazzini and another man named Albert Pike, who wanted a series of three wars?
Yeah, it seems that these three world wars, from a variety of sources, in fact, you were talking earlier today just about those that you come in contact with who have occult backgrounds and who have talked about this. This is taught to occultists, and I'd heard about it for a number of years, from occult sources, that in witchcraft and so on and in their covens and whatnot, I guess as you reach the higher levels, and the more secret and deeper and darker stuff they talk about. This great plan that was hatched back in 1871 when Giuseppe Mazzini sent a letter to Albert Pike, and Mazzini, of course, was the head of Italian masonry, and Albert Pike, who was deeply involved in the occult and wrote about the exaltation and worship of Lucifer, was the head of American masonry. And so Mazzini wrote this letter detailing a three-part plan to ultimately bring about this new world order, and with it, hand in hand, the global worship and adoration of Lucifer. And that was, and at least from the records that we have, those who have chronicled this, and I point, as I have in the past, to William T. Still's book on the New World Order, where he talks about how the result of the final cataclysmic event in World War III, the Third World War, that the result of that will be that the nations at that point will finally be disillusioned with Christianity, so he hopes, and at that point will be ready to receive the true and pure worship of Lucifer, as Mazzini puts it in his letter. And so this was a plan that was laid out back in the 1870s, around 1871, is when the letter is traditionally dated. And there was a plan for a First World War that was to bring about the overthrow of the Tsar in Russia. Now, this plan of revolutions, world revolutions, apparently was going on throughout the 19th century. It began with the French Revolution. The Russian Revolution was the second big one. But according to sources like Dr. Kent Hovind in his video series, he points out that there were a number of other revolutions happening throughout Europe where basically all of the monarchical systems of the ancient world were being torn down, and that was part of the plan. And I believe it's very symbolic because the government by kings and rulers is a government that was established by God. I mean, that's the way God set up the Davidic kingdom. You have a king. I mean, Jesus Christ is called the King of Kings. And so these guys, often, you know, pretending that they're fighting for the rights of humanity and supposedly, you know, for a government ruled by the people, which is a lie, and all you have to do is study their movement, and you see, like when the Jacobins went into France, they're supposedly there to defend the rights of the people, and so they need to overthrow the monarchs.
This was in 1789, you're speaking of.
Right,
the
French Revolution.
The French Revolution, right, the Bastille Day.
What do they do? I mean, the worst thing that you could say about Louis XVI and his wife, Marie Antoinette, historians, the worst thing that they say about them is that they were indifferent to the needs of the people. But then the Jacobins who come in and compel the people to overthrow them end up becoming far more bloodthirsty and cruel to the people. They slaughter some 18,000 during the Reign of Terror and then initiate a depopulation program as their answer to the unemployment problem and end up murdering another 300,000 people on top of that. Nothing that I've ever read or heard about Louis and Marie Antoinette comes close to comparing to the devastation that was wrought by those who overthrew them.
Well, I think that the tragedy is most people don't understand history, and the one thing we learned from history is we don't learn very much from history. Well, we'll be talking more about these various aspects of what's going on. All I know is that I have the Kaiser Wilhelm's diary, his memoirs, memories of Kaiser Wilhelm, who led Germany during the First World War, and in that he talks about how he'd been told about a secret Masonic conspiracy to overthrow all the monarchies of Europe, and he really felt that this was the group that was behind the First World War. The Kaiser, the German Kaiser, never understood what really had happened. Well, we'll talk more about this when we get back here, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just mentioning that in Kaiser Wilhelm's diary, he talks about the fact he had been told by a friend of his that there'd been a secret Masonic meeting some years before the onset of World War I, where they had actually been plotting the establishment of this war. Now, there were many, many people planning the establishment of this war. We have, if you've got my syllabus on Iraq, the Untold Story, you'll see the references to Bertrand Russell, who attended a meeting in about 1906 and 1907, a group known as the Coefficients, which was made up of the members of Cecil Rhodes' secret society. And in that, he talks about, Bertrand Russell talks about how Sir Edward Grey, who later would become the British Foreign Minister, and of course anybody who knows about Grey knows he's the man who created the war, and then when he could have done something to stop it, just happened to go fishing, sort of like during the Second World War, General George Catlett Marshall, who could have stopped the attack on Pearl Harbor, went horseback riding, or the September 11th attack. And when the president knew America was under attack, he was told America was under attack, he went to school and read about a rabbit or something of the sort. And even after he'd been told that the second plane had hit and World Trade Center, he continued reading about the rabbit, for another 6 or 7 minutes. You have to ask yourself, what insanity is this? Well, anyway, of course, Bertrand Russell in his autobiography, and anybody would like to see the pages of that, it is in our syllabus, and he talked about how, that he resigned from the organization because what they were planning at that time, Sir Edward Grey was planning, would lead to the First World War, a series of treaties that was going to surround the Central Powers. And even at that time, he realized this was planning for war. We have an article out of the American Journal of History written in 1909 talking about the plans for the First World War. We have the testimony of Norman Dodd, who is director of research for the Rees Committee, who sent a woman to go through the records of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. What a wonderful name, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And she had found that in 1909, they were actually planning on the First World War. They'd spent a year discussing how you would change society and bring about the world government. And they decided, the members of the board of directors of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, which had not yet been incorporated, were planning on a war. And then from 1909 to 1910, they planned on how they were going to get America into that war. So this first horrible, bloody war that over 21 million people died was planned ahead of time by people who had an objective, and their goal was the establishment of a world government. And those of you who have read the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, will find that gentleman, Nicholas Murray Butler, who led the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and the members of the board, this is 1915, 1916, decided that if they were going to do something about the war and try to bring about world peace, the most efficient thing that they could do was to bring America into the First World War. So they used the propaganda capacity of their foundation to propagandize the American people, to bring them into World War I in the name of bringing about world peace. And you may say that sounds a little absurd, but America's entry into that war simply prolonged it another year and a half and killed millions of more people. But that is the mentality of the people who are aligned against freedom today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Chris Pinto, and we're talking about the background to the First World War. And I'd simply mention that the Kaiser had felt that the First World War had been plotted by a secret Masonic conspiracy, and that's sort of going along with your story about the letter that had been written back in 1871 between two of the leaders of the Masonic movement. Of course, these were really people in the upper echelons of Masonry who were disciples of Lucifer, and the average Mason doesn't even understand that there are upper levels of Masonry beyond the 33rd degree. And if you don't believe that, you're a Mason, you need to get Aleister Crowley's writings, and he will tell you that he was a 33rd degree Mason for 12 years before he was selected to go into the upper echelons of Masonry, which most Masons are not even aware of. So you pick up the story there, Chris.
I just want to say a note on Crowley. I remember reading some time ago one of Crowley's essays on Freemasonry, and he talks about going through the Masonic rituals and so on and examining them, and how the first thing that he had to do when he was examining the rituals was to peel through the exoteric layer, as he called it, that was full of all kinds of symbolism that he says words to the effect, you know, it's fine for schoolboys and so on, but if you want to get to the deeper meaning, you've got to peel through it. And I would say that to Masons who are thinking that, you know, because they take this oath of secrecy walking in the door of Freemasonry, and then they're led to believe that their Masonic leadership is showing them all of these, you know, really deep secret things that they've got to, you know, hold on to and whatnot. And they don't realize that even those things, even those rituals and so on, are designed to mislead them. They're designed to be false. And Albert Pike even says this. We pointed out in our documentary that he says that symbols are placed to intentionally mislead the initiate. And he says it is not intended that they understand them, but it is intended that they shall imagine that they understand them. So if you're a Mason out there and you've been duped into thinking that your leadership is sharing their deep secrets with you at the first, second, or third degree, I would encourage you to go and take a look at Albert Pike's writings and look at Aleister Crowley's writings. I mean, Crowley admitted the first thing he had to do to understand Masonry was to peel back all the fluff that they had placed on the outside of it. But it's no accident that a man like Aleister Crowley, who called himself Tomegatherion, the great beast 666, he had a desire to be the beast of Revelation. In fact, you know, a lot of people read the Bible, and I've talked about this with a pastor of our church. You know, a lot of people read the Bible, and they're compelled, they're convicted one way or another. Aleister Crowley read the book of Revelation. A lot of people read Revelation, and they have a fear of God and a desire, hopefully, to repent of their sin and turn their heart toward God and believe the gospel of His Son, Jesus Christ, that He died for your sins, and He wants to save you. But Crowley, on the other hand, he read the book of Revelation, and he became fascinated with the characters of Mystery Babylon, the mother of harlots. He became fascinated with the beast and developed a desire to actually work and help to bring these things that he was reading about to come to pass. And so it's no accident that he called himself the Great Beast 666, and his work was dedicated toward bringing about Satan's new eon or new age to ultimately lead to this, you know, great gathering and climactic conflict at Armageddon. But Crowley was a Mason. I've heard that he was a 90th level Mason, you know, something that I'd never heard before. Didn't even know that there was a 90th degree. But Crowley was heavily involved in Masonry. In fact, there's a pretty well-handed-out photograph of him in his Masonic garb. But even before Aleister Crowley came Mazzini and Albert Pike, and this letter that was written by Mazzini to Pike outlining these three world wars. And so the First World War was to topple Russia. The Second World War, you know, to topple Russia and set up this really a Luciferian empire in old Russia. And then the Second World War was to give power to this empire over Europe. And then the Third World War was to be between the Muslims and the Jews in the Middle East and ultimately bring about this New World Order empire.
And I fear that this is what we're seeing. We'll be back here in just a moment or two at Radio Liberty and continue our discussion. Of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Yeah. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Chris Pinto, and we're talking about his video, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon. If you haven't seen it, you really need to get it, and because I think you'll learn a great deal from it. I was just looking up the quotations from Albert Pike talking about masonry. Now, this is in his book, Morals and Dogma, and this was the Bible of Freemasonry. It was given to every Mason who completed the 14th degree up until about 1974. By that time, they'd dumbed down the American population so far that the average Mason couldn't read the book, so they've come up with a new book. I think it's Beyond the Light that they read now. But this is what it says on page 104, Morals and Dogma. If you're a Mason, I hope you'll get this and check it out. Masonry conceals its secrets from all except the adepts and the sages or the elect, and uses false explanations and misinterpretations of its symbols to mislead those who deserve only to be misled, to conceal the truth which it calls light from them and to draw them away from it. In other words, he's bragging that they are lying to people within the Masonic movement. On page 819, that's 819 of Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike reveals that the blue degrees, and he's talking of masonry, are but the outer court or portico of the temple. Part of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations. It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine that he understands them. Their true explication is reserved for the adepts and the princes of masonry. So everything in masonry is simply to conceal the truth from the people who come in. And only if you are felt to be worthy will you ever be given the true meaning of the symbol. So it's all based upon a lie. And the great tragedy, there are an awful lot of good people who enter masonry without understanding what it is all about. And it was laid out in a book called The Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, written by Manly P. Hall, who was masonry's leading philosopher. And when he died, that's what the Scottish Rite magazine said about him. And in the book, The Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, and I quote that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why Hall said that masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity of men who are just having a good time, but an inner fraternity of those who study the Ancorum and the Ancanorum, and that is the secret and the secret of secrets. And what is that secret? Why, all you need to do is get into the background of what it is. The secret is that Lucifer is God, and they worship Lucifer rather than the God of the Bible because they hate the God of the Bible. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we have Joshua calling in from Capitola. Hi, Joshua. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm okay, Dr. Stan. I just want to say that I was listening to the BBC radio station this morning.
Right.
And they was talking about how that they're putting a, you know, an implication to the government over there, and they're trying to get this like a referendum to have the legal system or something changed to Latin, of all things. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I really don't know anything. Really can't comment on that at all. But
it was on the BBC this morning.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Do you have anything
else? Incredible, though. I mean, you know, they're gonna. It's like the royal, like the beast that was slain and then came back to life.
In other words,
Revelations is supposed to be like Roman government all coming back to life, and now they've got the European Union who wants to make Latin as a you know, like a national language, you know, like a, you know, over all the other languages, you know, of the states they have.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're going to have an awful lot of time, hard time finding many people who are fluent in Latin today, that's for sure.
Well, they're you're planning on having it taught in the schools as a second language.
All right, well.
As the universal language of the European Union, have Latin in the legal system at first, and then, you know, just, you know, I mean, euro, dollar, and everything. So that's kind of like, there's like an unfolding of the prophecy, you know, of the European Union. They say it's like another thing of the empire coming back, the Roman Empire.
Well,
they want to have Latin. These people are working, you know, behind the scenes and stuff, but they want to have Latin as a national language of Europe.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Josh Rush. I certainly appreciate you calling and let us know about it. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. And there are all sorts of strange things that are happening today. Most people who know what's going on today have seen this poster picture of the incomplete Temple of Babylon that was built by Nimrod. And it's really very interesting because only part of the walls are completed. It is not simply by accident that they actually have built a building, and I think it's in Brussels, a place for the European Union, and they have taken and they've actually replicated this in a regular office building, and it is exactly the same design, because the people of Europe, at least who are leading this move towards world government, understand that this is the completion of the ancient program laid out by Nimrod to create a world government under the world leader. And of course God intervened at that time and put a stop to it, but they intend to circumvent God's will, and man is going to bring about this world government and fulfill Nimrod's desire.
Yeah, that poster, in fact, is it's got a number of upside down stars floating over the image of the Tower of Babel there, and there's a motto written up underneath it. It says, Europe, many tongues, one voice. And it's almost a defiant declaration about reversing what God did at the Tower of Babel, because what he did was, you know, all the nations were of one speech, so he confused their languages, and they couldn't understand each other, and he scattered them. And now mankind seeks to reverse that. And so,
would you like to explain to our listeners what the significance is of the upside-down star? Because this is one of the occult emblems that we see all around us. When you see a star, ordinarily, there's a single point at the top and two points at the bottom. When they reverse this, it has tremendous occult significance. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, as I've learned it, if you've got a five-pointed star, the pentagram, an upside-down pentagram usually means it's a symbol for evil. An upright pentagram is a symbol for good, but it's like good magic versus black magic, as I've learned it.
Well, basically what it does, the symbol of Satan is a goat, and he has two horns and he has two ears. And then he has, of course, a short, stubby beard. And so when you look at the upside-down star with a point downward, that's the beard. And then, of course, the two points coming out from the side are the ears, and the two points at the top are the horns. Every occultist understands that. It's amazing how these people hide their emblems in plain sight, and the average American, the average person in Europe, doesn't recognize the occult or satanic significance of the stars on that poster that circulated in Europe of the incomplete Temple of Babylon, which is being rebuilt now. And they believe that the European Union is the reconstitution of what was started almost 5,000 years ago by Nimrod.
Two, the upside-down star also represents like a falling star or a falling angel. When Satan, in the book of Revelation, when the great dragon, right before he's cast out of heaven, it says with his tail he cast down a third of the stars of heaven. And so the falling star in the occult and even in Christianity represents a fallen angel or a demon, as it were, demonic powers and principalities. So I believe that symbolism is also a part of what they're trying to communicate with this Europe, many tongues, one voice, Tower of Babel poster.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. So it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, maybe you've seen Chris Pinto's video on Megiddo and would like to get your thoughts on it. Did you enjoy it? I think it was an outstanding video, but we'd like your comments on it as well. Not only as far as the storyline, but as far as the technical. What I was so impressed was the technical expertise and the music and the animation and how they were all woven together in such a manner to really draw you into this story and hold you transfixed for a little over 2 hours. How long is it, the entire production?
The whole thing is 2 hours and 15 minutes, Dr. Stan.
Well, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes well spent, and something that you can show to others, even people who are certainly not Christians, but you may very well at least give them very serious food for thought as we contemplate the coming of World War III. I just wanted to comment briefly on this letter that was sent from Mazzini to a Pike. Now, I've never seen a copy. I've tried to get a copy of it. It said that it was shown at the British Museum for many years, and Bill Steele, who I have a great deal of respect for, has written that in his book, The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies. That's The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, a very important book which we do carry. But I do know that one of my friends tried to track the story down, and the story, at least in the West, was told in a book written by Commander Guy Carr. And when Commander Guy Carr passed away, while he gave his papers, left them to another man, and a very close friend of mine named Des Griffin tried to get hold of those papers, and it was just the day before he was to meet with the man who had the papers when the man suddenly died. Now, maybe that was just a coincidence. Maybe it wasn't, who knows. But we see so many of these coincidences among my friends and people I've known who have been in this battle to try to educate the American people as to what's going on, and so many of them have died under very mysterious circumstances. So anyway, the video is profound, and I believe, from what I've been able to get from other people, and we have a gentleman who's been a frequent guest here on our program, that's William Snevelin, who I've checked out and I believe is absolutely telling the truth. He was highly placed in Masonry. He was a disciple of Manly P. Hall. And Manly P. Hall had told him of this plan for the Third World War, which was to be, and he was talking to him in the early 1980s, that the Third World War would come about in the year 2002 and would involve an American invasion of Iraq. Now, they had planned at that time there would be retaliation on the United States with chemical and biological warfare. That's what Snevelin was told. So it didn't come out exactly as they had planned, but at least they were planning war at that time. Anyway, it's an interesting thing. I believe Snevelin is telling me what he was told by Mandy P. Hall. But once again, Lucifer really didn't have it completely right. Let's go to Warren, who's calling from Chicago. Hi, Warren. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Question or comment?
Yeah, I had a question. I don't doubt that there's things under, you know, moves underfoot to form a one-world government. But I'm just curious, is how can these two guys that your guest talked about back in the 1870 or whatever it was, how can those two guys, how could two people have influenced things such that it results in World War One, World War Two, and, you know, the coming conflict between the Muslims and the Judeo-Christian people now?
All right, that's a very legitimate question. Chris, would you like to give your thoughts on that? Then I'll give mine.
Yeah, my thought on that would be that if you study those two guys, if you study Mazzini and Albert Pike, they represent just a massive worldwide army of Masons who are all interconnected with this secret brotherhood. They all take oaths and vows and all of these other kind of things to protect one another and to serve one another in every circumstance. Not only that, but because these guys are completely tapped into the power of Satan, they have that demonic empowerment. And, of course, the Bible talks about this demonic empowerment. It talks about these spirits of devils that go forth under the kings of the earth and the nations to gather them together. So they've got a lot of power working in their favor in that way, kind of like Adolf Hitler. If you study Hitler and those that that talk about him, there was a guy who witnessed him and, you know, heard him speak and whatnot, and commented that he was the very seat of thrones and principalities and powers that had been written about by the Apostle Paul that can come and inhabit a man and take control of him, you know, like a garrison.
You're speaking of he was demonically possessed.
Right, demonically possessed.
Mm-hmm.
So his speeches were not just a man, you know, giving forth his ideas. They were empowered. If you study witchcraft, the core of witchcraft is what Crowley said. It's do what thou wilt. It's exercising your will over the will of others. And as Dr. Stan has pointed out about Colonel House had the supernatural ability to influence people. So I think you've got those two things going on. You've got this temporal loyalty among Masons and secret society members, but then you've also got these dark powers that, you know, as Satan attempted to tempt Jesus Christ, saying, you know, if you'll bow down and worship me, then I'll give you all, you know, the kingdoms and the glories of the world. But Jesus, of course, resisted, but these men have not resisted. They have bowed the knee to Baal, as it were, and are receiving the very temporary reward that Satan has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Warren, I really think that that Mazzini, if the letter was written as it was told, was simply manifesting the devil's plan, not his own. I think that these men were energized by evil, and I believe that there is a Luciferian plan for the world, with the ultimate hope that Lucifer will triumph over God and bring about a one-world government. Well, I don't think that in the final analysis Lucifer's going to win. I think he's going to lose. But all of history really is this battle between the devil and the God of the Bible, and the devil's tried over and over again to get the best of God. And I believe he believes that if he can create a world government and destroy the Jews, then he will have won. I think he's going to lose. I'm sure he's going to lose. But in the meantime, people have to understand that there is this spiritual battle going on. I don't think that Mazzini made these things happen at all, or that Pike made them happen. I believe that there is this Luciferian force working behind the scenes that made these things happen.
Mm-hmm. They're simply serving as Lucifer's agents.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
What was the name of the book that the video, Megiddo?
Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, and Chris actually produced it. It's a great video.
And where would I get that?
We could call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927.
Got it.
Okay.
Enjoy your program.
Hey, thanks so very much. And do you listen on the AM station there?
Yeah, it's out of Sandwich, Illinois.
Right.
WAUR or something
right.
like that.
Right. WAUR. Yeah. What is it? About 960 on the dial.
I believe that's it.
Okay, I can't keep track of them.
Yeah.
God bless you. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And in studio with me is Chris Pinto. We're talking about his video, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon. And I recommend it to you. I think it's well done. And it's something that you'll not only enjoy, but you'll want to get your friends to watch. Because somehow we have to get people to realize that these are perilous times for our country and for the unborn generations. Because if America is lost, why, freedom as we know it will never surface again during our lifetimes, that's for certain. And there really is an effort to destroy this country, because at one time, America was the beacon of hope for all of mankind. Everybody until 50 years ago, everybody in the world knew the United States was a Christian nation. Today, if any politician or public figure dares to get up and make that statement, he will be attacked by both the right and the left sides of our media. Why? Because both the right and the left side of the media are controlled by exactly the same people. And if you doubt that, we have a wonderful article by Richard Harwood, who is the ombudsman for the Washington Post, an article written back in October of 1993. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll give you that, send you a copy of the article, and he lays it all out, that the right and the left are controlled by people all related and belonging to the Council on Foreign Relations. As you said, this is the closest thing we have to a ruling elite. Now, the Council on Foreign Relations is simply one of the occultic organizations that we face today. But we do face them. They're here. They have a plan. And their plan is the destruction of America. I believe taking us into a world war and establishing a new world order and a new world religion. So we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Chris Pinto. And Chris, we've got about 2 minutes before we go to the break.
Oh, okay. You know what I wanted to do? I just wanted to mention something on a follow-up for Warren's inquiry about, you know, how can these guys set something down that comes to pass. Another great book to read, one that you and I were talking about earlier, Dr. Stan, is Aleister Crowley's Book of the Law that he wrote, I think, back in 1904, that Crowley himself admitted was channeled to him by a demonic spirit. There are many people, of course, who believe that demonic spirit was Satan himself. But in this book, the Book of the Law, Crowley outlines what would be necessary throughout the 20th century to bring about the new eon or the new age. And if you gather his collective writings, he's really talking about the new age of Satan. And he called for a series of programs, things to be initiated, everything from the propagation of extramarital sex, things like fornication, adultery, the propagation of sodomy and homosexuality, the propagation of drug use and hallucinogens, the normalization of even pedophilia, and all of these different things that he had outlined. And if you look at his chief disciples through the 20th century, the men who brought these things to pass, men like Timothy Leary, men like Harry Hay with the homosexual movement, Hugh Hefner and Robert Anton Wilson with Playboy, and many others.
How about Alfred Kinsey?
Alfred Kinsey, he's another one we were talking about. The Beatles, who brought Eastern mysticism to America, they were disciples of Aleister Crowley. In fact, Crowley had called for the Eastern religions to be brought into the West to help prepare Western culture for the new eon.
Well, let's hold that. We have Rick calling from Illinois, and we can pick that up during the next hour. Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I wanted to call in because I have an opinion.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I've often wondered why in the Book of Revelation the devil is going to go by the number 666.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you my opinion, and you could tell me if I'm close on this, but when Lucifer lost his position in heaven, he took a third of the angels with him. That's what how I understand it, okay? Well, in the Book of Revelation, there's war in heaven, and Satan is going to fall. Even though Lucifer lost his position in heaven, Satan was also allowed to be in heaven. Okay, he just lost his position. Because in the Book of Job, it proves that Satan still came to the throne of God and talked to God about tempting Job. Anyway, in the Book of Revelation, there's war in heaven, and the dragon it gets cast out, and he knows he's got a short time. Well, when there was war in heaven, and the devil gets cast out, I got a feeling he took another third of the angels with him when he got cast out during that war, and he's probably going to be known as Mr. Two-Thirds.
I see. Well, do you have any thoughts at all on that, Chris?
Well, it's I'm sort of trying to try and figure out exactly what you're...
The point is that the figure 666 is that that the devil has two thirds of the angels rather than simply a third. I think that, Rick, it's an interesting conjecture. I think it's only conjecture. I would not even want to hazard a guess that this is the meaning of the figure 666. There's a great deal in numerology.
Well, there's a reason why every number in the Bible is that number.
Nice.
There has to be a reason for it. And 666 is the equivalent of two-thirds of anything.
Absolutely, and that may be it. I would not want to say you were wrong. I just couldn't say you were right either. But I appreciate your thought on that, and maybe somebody else will have some thoughts. Okay,
thanks for letting me talk.
Thanks very much, Rick.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And there are lots of things that we can contemplate and wonder about, but I think that there are certain things that we can be fairly sure about, and that is that the Lord is coming again. And I believe that there are going to be some very, very difficult times. And God is to be consistent. And we see what's happening in America. How could he not bring his judgment upon this nation? I believe there's a great apostasy taking place in the churches today. in the name of trying to appeal more to society, to be more acceptable to the average individual, why they change the message in many of the churches, and they don't talk about sin or hell, or they don't talk about the fact we're all sinners saved by grace, because they want to make us feel good, so we'll keep coming back to church. They changed the music of the church, and they brought the heavy drum beats into the church, and I believe some of this comes right out of the pit of hell. And those of you who have not heard our interviews with Jack Wheeler or some of the others, let me suggest you get our 4-tape set on musical madness, and I think it will give you tremendous insight into understanding of what's going on with the music of the church today. As we turn from the hymns of worship to those that stimulate the base desires of the individual. Well, right now we're going to have to just talk a little bit to our listeners and remind them that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree with me and with our special guest, Chris, that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural battlefield, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's the mainstay of what we do. And this then allows us to be on the radio 5 hours every day. Our weekend program is heard on 36 stations, and wish we could be heard on a lot more. But I just thank God for the outreach that we do have. And this program, this last hour, is heard on 10 stations, plus shortwave, plus the internet, and so we do have a growing listening audience across the nation, with people who are beginning to understand how this all fits together, and that most of what we hear in the media is simply designed to confuse us about the true nature of the battle we're engaged in. Well, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you ask for our March newsletter, I think you'll find it fascinating, because we will tell you what was discussed at the meetings, the secret cabinet meetings in the White House in January and February of the year 2001, 7 to 8 months before the September 11th attack. I think you'll be horrified when you know what happened. And we're simply quoting from the book written by Paul O'Neill, who was the Secretary of Treasury, who attended those meetings. And you perhaps have second thoughts about what's taking place in Iraq today. And then, of course, you probably want to get our video. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. And if you get the syllabus, you'll actually get the writings of the people who planned the war in Iraq back in 1998. And you'll read their writings of the small little group of men called the Project for the New American Century. We just pulled the material down off of their website and put it in our syllabus so you can read it. And you'll find that in 1998, Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz were calling for a war with Iraq. 1998 had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction, had nothing to do with what a terrible guy Saddam Hussein was, because, of course, Donald Rumsfeld was over there visiting him during the Reagan administration. You really need to have the information and then help us to get the truth out, because very little that we are told through the media is accurate. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Don't forget to order a copy of the video Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, by our special guest this evening, Chris Pinto. And so until tomorrow evening, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Good evening once again. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you'd like to call us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And give us a call. Our guest this evening in studio is Chris Pinto. We've been shooting video footage all day, or a good part of the day, in preparation for the second of his programs in the series on Megiddo, The March to Armageddon. And we think it's a great video. And before we went to the break, and we did take a call from Rick there in Illinois, but Chris was talking about this idea that Aleister Crowley had many disciples, people who agreed with him, who were basically into this whole satanic movement, and one of them was a man named Alfred Kinsey, who wrote The Sexual Behavior of the Human Male and changed the sexual mores of our society. Of course, Kinsey was financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, mm-hmm. because if you go into the background of the Rockefeller Foundation, so much of what it has done has been frankly subversive, aimed at undermining the moral and social fabric of our society in preparation for taking us into the new world order and the new world religion. And then he was mentioning that Timothy Leary, who encouraged people to get onto drugs. What was his old saying about turn on and drop out, take LSD, have a good trip? And then the encouragement of the Eastern mysticism, the Beatles. All of these people, in one way or another, were tied into this Crowleyite movement. Why don't you pick up that thought, Chris?
Well, I was responding to, one of our callers, one of your callers, that called in, and I was just commenting about this letter that was written by Mazzini to Pike about the three world wars and how could these guys bring this to pass. And that's a great example, I think, of guys who were inspired by the power of Satan, who received this, as you suggested, this occultic vision from the powers of darkness to set forth this plan. And then we see it coming to pass in parts through the 20th century. Another example, and this I was pointing to, that people who have doubts about this or questions or whatnot could look to Aleister Crowley's writings at the beginning of the 20th century, see how he outlined a plan that he received again from the powers of darkness, from these satanic force. And then set that forth, and then even though Crowley himself passed away, just like Pike and Mazzini did, these evil powers were working in the lives of those who would come afterward and inspiring them to pick this plan up and to carry it out one generation after another. And it's just uncanny just how these men have pretty much laid down their lives for this cause, for this dark and evil cause. And in fact, when I first encountered this information in the video, Rock and Roll Sorcerers of the New Age Revolution, I was just amazed at how much these people are willing to do to serve the Prince of Darkness. And I thought about how much more we should do who serve the Prince of Peace, the Lord Jesus Christ.
And I think that's really so true. I'm often asked, well, you believe that there's this conspiracy, and they always sort of emphasize conspiracy that goes on from generation to generation. How could this possibly be? And I say, well, look, we have ministers. They give the whole of their life because they believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they believe he's going to return, but most of them have known down through the centuries that he wasn't going to return during their lifetime, but they were preparing the way for him. And I believe that, tragically, we have people who've given their lives to the dark side, and, of course, they're preparing the way for their God. and that would be Lucifer. Now, you have to understand the mentality behind this, and you pick this up from the writings of Albert Pike and writings of Madame Blavatsky, and it's basically the idea that the God of the Bible has all these thou shalt not. He's got all the restrictions on your life. He wants to tell you, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Whereas, of course, Lucifer gives you true freedom. Lucifer doesn't put any bounds on what you will do. Do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. You become the determinant, not God. Well, what people don't understand is freedom is not the ability to do what you want to do, and whatever you want to do, it's the ability to do what you should do according to God's laws, because when we turn our back on God's laws, we lay ourselves open for moral anarchy. We've got Joseph who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Joseph. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Are you listening to the Internet shortwave or the station there in Chicago?
Well, actually, I listen to you on the radio, but I just catch parts of it through the static.
Okay.
And not shortwave. And my question, I think, is somewhat relative to your program, although I'm not entirely sure because I was listening through the static.
I'm sorry. Now, is this the radio static, or do you have shortwave or internet?
It's the radio static.
Okay, fine. You don't have access to shortwave or internet, do you?
I have internet, and I've tried to get you on, but I've been unsuccessful.
Okay, did you go to RadioLiberty.com?
And yeah, I did.
Okay, and I'm surprised you should be able to pull down the live program. We're steaming right this minute, but go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. Well, this could take a little bit of time here. First of all, I work at night, and I listen to these programs late at night on the way home from work. And I was listening to, I don't know if you've heard of him, Brother Stair.
Do you know him?
No, I don't.
Okay.
He has a worldwide ministry, and I was listening to the static, his program. And he was talking about one of his colleagues, Brother Somebody, who's passed away. He was saying that this his colleague had made 7 predictions, that in 5 of which have come to pass. And the 6th and 7th have yet to come to pass. The 6th was about a woman who would rise up in America, and they were referring to Hillary Clinton. At any rate, he also said that one of his prophecies was that he had a vision that America would be left in rubble and that their enemies would show no mercy. And then he had gone on to say, and I studied the New World Order, so I know a little bit about it, and I never had thought about this, but after I heard him say it, it made a lot of sense. He said that the United Nations is going to get all of its nations together and gang up on America, and that would be the end, and that they would show no mercy, and we'd be left in rubble. And I'm asking this question because I want to get your thoughts on it, because I've heard you say that you think there's going to be a nuclear strike on America that the government's going to allow. So I was curious as to your thoughts.
All right, fine. Do you want to address that, Chris? And then I'll address it. Do you go ahead and... Joseph is asking first about this gentleman who has a friend who has made all these prophecies, and certainly the last one would tend to correspond with the things you're concerned about and that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, it's... I would first of all say, before investing too much in whatever this guy, you know, his late friend and what he prophesied, I would go and examine the details of those things, because as we show in Megiddo, people have for years said that, you know, somebody like Nostradamus has all of these uncanny prophecies. But then when you go and examine them, and especially if you examine them and compare them to Bible prophecy, you come to find out that they're vague ramblings. That they're not really saying anything specific, and that it's just guesswork. It's like somebody saying, well, tomorrow you're going to meet somebody with brown hair. They're not really prophesying anything in any great detail. Although the things that you're sharing about America ending up in a pile of rubble, that does seem pretty specific. That could happen. There are those who, like David Bay at Cutting Edge, talks about how one of the symbols for America, the eagle, which in the occult is sort of a double for the phoenix. And the phoenix bird, what's known about the phoenix is that, you know, rise up in glory, but then it falls, it dies, it suffers a death, okay, as it were, falling from heaven, as it were. It's a picture of Lucifer, and then it rises up again from the rubble. There are those who believe that America will at some point suffer a great fall and then rise up again and meet, you know, I guess be rebuilt in this new world order system. On the other hand, there are those that believe that America has been chosen to lead the way into this new world order system and to be the new Atlantis, as it were. So whether or not America will be destroyed, I mean, clearly there's a plan. There's, you know, this book like by James Wardner, who wrote The Planned Destruction of America. Somebody is, you know, there are forces at work clearly that are trying to hinder and cripple this nation in a number of ways. Whether or not they're going to, you know, forcibly destroy it, I don't know. I mean, I don't see it happening anytime soon, but at the same time, you know, I certainly wouldn't put it past the forces at work.
Okay, well, first of all, Joseph, I can't comment on what this other gentleman has said, other than the question would be, what is going to happen to America? Now, all I can do, I look to Ezekiel, I think 38, and I think verse 6, somewhere in there, 39, verse 6, where they talk about this fire coming down from the heavens at this time, sometime in the future, and of course, the people's eyes melt in their sockets. What they have to be almost describing would be some sort of a nuclear strike. But I look at what's going on from a logical point of view. And I've been following the debate about an anti-ballistic missile system going back to the 1970s, because I'm old enough to remember when America had an active and accurate and effective anti-ballistic missile system. And we built that in the 1970s to guard the missiles that we had stationed in the northeast or central part of the United States, that you could have, according to the treaty, one anti-ballistic missile system, and the Russians could have one anti-ballistic missile system.
What exactly is anti-ballistic?
They're the ones that will take down an incoming ballistic missile. In other words, if we were under attack, you would launch the anti-ballistic missiles and they would take down the incoming missiles. So we had a system that would work in 1970. And then during the Carter administration, somebody said, oh, this is so expensive to maintain. We'd already spent $30, $40, $50 billion building it. It's going to cost us $1 billion a year to maintain it. And they said, we've got to dismantle that. After all, we want the Russians to know that they have nothing to fear from us. If we protect our missiles and they protect their missiles, why? What we want is mutual assured destruction. So that if they strike us, we strike them, everybody is vaporized, so nobody would dare have a war. So we took down our anti-ballistic missile system, and the Russians continued building theirs, and they have a very effective anti-ballistic missile system because they have on every one of their missiles a nuclear warhead. A small nuclear warhead goes off in space and takes down not only the missiles but the decoys. So then when Ronald Reagan came in, he said, well, we have to have an anti-ballistic missile system again. I mean, we just wasted $20 or $30 billion and torn down the one that we have, but now we have to build a new one. He was immediately attacked and accused of wanting to create Star Wars. And then, of course, we could have deployed an anti-ballistic missile system at that time. But we did not deploy anti-ballistic missiles at that time. We talked about it, and we invested all sorts of billions and billions and billions of dollars in a system that we knew wouldn't work. And instead of putting an explosive, small nuclear warhead on the missiles like the Russians had and like we had on our initial ones, we said, no, we've got to hit a speeding bullet with a speeding bullet. And technically, you just couldn't do this with any degree of accuracy. And they knew that. They did not want America to have a defense. Now, ask yourself logically, why would anybody put America into a position of jeopardy when the Soviets had an anti-ballistic missile system, a massive system of civilian defense, in other words, underground, stocked areas where you could put entire cities underground and protected from an anti-ballistic missile system? Why would you allow them to have an effective system? Now, they're only supposed to have just one system, but they spread it out all over the country. They have something like 12,000 missiles, anti-ballistic missiles, that they can, if we were to launch against them, if they were to launch against us, we would be foolish to counter-launch against them, because they could come back and just wipe out all of our cities. Why in heaven's name would our leaders be this stupid unintentionally? And I don't think it is unintentional, which is why I tend to believe, as Joel Skousen does, that we're being set up for a nuclear strike. And I believe that
probably our leaders have other plans. They have other secret weapons that they haven't told us about. And whether that has anything to do with HAARP or laser, space-guided lasers or whatever it is, I think that we can win in a nuclear exchange, and we're luring the communists into a strike against us. I fear, however, that they may have forgotten a few things, like they forgot over in Iraq, like what happens after you've won the war, and what happens when they start guerrilla warfare and using civilians as shields, and then everything begins to fall apart. And it could very well be that our enemies would simply knock out our satellites. We would have no defense at all. But look on beyond the logical part, this from a military point of view. How do you think God feels about America, this country that has had so much, had so many wonderful benefits, has been so prosperous and so free, and we've turned against God? At one time, this was a Christian nation. But you really think it's a Christian nation today?
84% of the people say they are, but in their heart, I don't think they are.
I don't think they are either. In fact, I was just talking to somebody this morning who works with high school students. He's been with them for 4 years and in a church ministry. He said almost every one of these high school students has come to him and told him that they're addicted to pornography. I mean, these are Christian kids in a Christian church program, and yet they're all into pornography. And, of course, we're allowing this thing to happen because the Supreme Court has prevented local communities from doing anything about this filth that is polluting the minds of our youth. I believe God is going to bring his wrath on this country. I really fear for my country. So, does that answer your question?
Well, pretty much, I guess. It was a lot. Do you have any time frame?
No. I'm not a prophet. I don't make no claims to prophecy. I'm not even a theologian. I'm a retired orthopedic surgeon. What I know is a little bit that I've learned from 40 years of study and from traveling around the world and meeting world leaders and ambassadors and generals and then talking to a lot of people a lot smarter than I am. And I think I've learned a certain amount of what's going on in the world. And that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, to share that with you and others, so that when I'm not here, then you can pick this message up and take it on. And if I can teach you a little of what I've learned, then you'll be able to teach others.
Right. You do a great job.
God bless you.
Take care.
Hey, thanks so very much. And let's go to Jim, who's calling from Santa Cruz. And I'll put that telephone number out again. Once again, it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Great, Stan. Thank you. And I just wanted to ask if you guys knew where there was a website or even a book that has this letter of Albert Pike's talking about the three world wars.
All right. Do you want to respond to that, Chris?
I would say, check out William T. Still's book, The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies. And he's got, he chronicles bits and pieces of the letters and bits and pieces of the letter that was written by Mazzini. That's the first place that I found it in a book where somebody actually set it down, and then he makes reference to another work that he took it from. You can also, if you get a copy of that book, you could also send an email to Cutting Edge Ministries and David Bay, or log onto their website at cuttingedge.org, and he's got a number of articles that talks about this plan for three world wars, and then he cites, I think, Cisco Wheeler and others that have come out of the occult and who are familiar with it, and talk about it being handed down through the oral tradition.
And I would suggest the book The Unseen Hand by Ralph Epperson. We do carry both the New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, and certainly The Unseen Hand. So both of those are available, Jim, through my ministry. Have I ever seen a copy of the original? No, I wish I had. I've done everything I could to track it down, and I have not been able to lay my hands on it. I've talked to others who try to do the same thing. All we can do is rely upon these others, but I think there's a great deal to suggest that it may well be true. Anything else? We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Chris Pinto, and we had Jim on the line, and we just lost Jim on the line. So if Jim had anything else to say, he's certainly welcome to call back. And you're welcome to call us here at 464-8295 in the Central Coast of California, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I do have my conversations with William Schneblin, who told the story that, and he said that he was told by Manly P. Hall that there would be a war that would be starting in 2002, and that America would attack Iraq. However, he had said that Saddam Hussein then was to have retaliated upon America with chemical and biological warfare, which did not take place. So I guess Manly P. Hall wasn't much of a prophet, and that's why I don't make any prophecies. I am not a prophet at all. All I am is an observer, and I see these things happen, and I try to make some sense out of them. But I realize that between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And I believe God does have a plan, and all we can do is try to understand that. So pick up the story from there, Chris.
Well, I wanted to say just about that comment about Manly P. Hall predicting the war with Iraq and whatnot. When we interviewed Dave Hunt in Megiddo, he talks about, I asked him, you know, if Satan has prophetic ability in the interview. And he said his response to that is that Satan's prophetic ability might be compared to like a stock market analyst being able to, you know, take a look at, you know, the history of the stock market and to predict what the future might be. And of course, because Satan is a brilliant angelic being, his guess is likely to be much better than the average man's guess. And so Satan could guess and kind of factor things in a certain way, and he could get a high degree of accuracy. But that's the distinction that God makes in the Bible. God is the only person who can, with 100% accuracy, predict and foretell exactly what's going to happen in the future. And so I still find, you know, when people say that they get these occultic visions, whether it's Pike and Mazzini or Crowley or Manly P. Hall, you know, predicting the invasion of Iraq, they're not going to be exact. And I think that demonstrates that, you know, they do come from an occult source, a highly super intelligent being out there is inspiring these men to foresee and foretell these things. But it clearly tells us that we should put our faith in the God of the Bible, because he is the only person who knows the end from the beginning, as he declares throughout his word.
And I think you're absolutely right, and all we can do is be observers as this story unfolds. But it is so fascinating, if you stop and think about it. There are wicked dictators all throughout the world today. I mean, there are wicked dictators in Africa, certainly the Mugabe in Rhodesia is starving his population to death, those who won't go along with him. The United States had pledged back in 1975 or 1976 that if Mugabe ever stopped the rule of law and dissolved the courts and began to act as the communist that he was when we put him in power, and he's always been a communist, and we put him in power knowing he was a communist, insisted on having new elections. Originally, the Rhodesians had, in free elections, had elected a man named Bishop Mizraim, who was a moderate black. We didn't like him. We wanted Mugabe in there because he was a communist, and so we kept insisting. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I was just pointing out how we brought Mugabe to power in Rhodesia, so we could certainly have gone over and tried to do something about Rhodesia, but we didn't. We decided to go to war with Iraq. We could have certainly thought about going to war with Kim Il-sung's son up there in North Korea. After all, he has nuclear weapons, which theoretically threaten the United States. So why didn't we go to war with him? I believe that the whole history of the world involves around the Middle East and around Israel as well. I don't know how it all fits together, but I do know that we are financing the Israeli government. And we're financing the Palestinian Liberation Army and Arafat, and we're training and arming the Palestinian terrorists. That really doesn't make sense. Of course, they're getting money from the Saudis as well, who we finance, who we support. So why don't we demand that they cut off aid to the terrorists? No, we'd let them go right ahead, and we supply it if they don't. So why would we be supplying both sides? It really doesn't make sense other than we want conflict there. We want this conflict to continue. You mean to tell me that there has been no way to have a permanent peace in there, going all the way back to 1948 when the State of Israel was established after the British pulled out? I think that we could have had peace any time we wanted, but we've never wanted peace. We've wanted this conflict, and I believe, and I'm not sure how it all fits together, but I'm sure it's in God's plan eventually there is going to be another great conflict there. Well, let's go to Nathan, who's calling in. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hi. Listen. Good evening, gentlemen. I'm sorry. What's your guest name again?
His name is Chris Pinto, and he is the producer of the video Megiddo, the March to Armageddon, which I recommend to you.
Well, listen. You know, here's an interesting way to look at it. At the subject of, heaven forbid, but it is going to happen, a Russian invasion of both Israel and the United States, aligned with other powers. You know, in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 38 and 39, it does speak of divine intervention in the midst of an invasion of Israel.
Right.
Now, you could also argue, and some have, I've read some interesting sources that argue that that would also include America. Well, the interesting thing is if you did have, you know, if that interpretation is correct, and it is, and I believe that it is correct, that it's a Russian invasion of Israel and the United States, then if you think about it, think about the scenario of divine intervention, and then the forces that rule here take credit for it. And if you think about the whole concept of deception, that you're taking credit for God's own miracles, and that in a sense is the ultimate blasphemy. And it's just a thought I'd want people to think about.
All right. The one thing I would comment is that most people believe that Gog and Magog are Russia. There are some people who believe it's Iran, and that the invasion will be a Muslim invasion, attack on Israel, with perhaps Russia aligned. All I can do is throw that into the confuse the issue. But as things are lining up today, I can see we are doing everything. Our foreign policy is designed. Much of what we read from our leaders is designed to inflame the attitude of the Muslim world against America, and to inflame the attitude of the American against the Muslim. And I really, of course, Russia is there, and they may very well come in on the sides of the Muslims. And this is all conjecture. I don't have a word from God that tells me, but my logic tells me that perhaps this really is going to be more of a Muslim invasion with Russian help than primarily a Russian invasion with Muslim help. But let's get Chris's ideas. What are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about what he said about the invasion of Russia into Israel and the United States. Now, I know about the theories about the Northern Kingdom, you know, and many people believing that represents Russia invading Israel, and of course about, you know, the Muslim invasion mentioned in Ezekiel. But as far as Russia invading the United States, I think that if that were to happen at some point, anywhere in the next decade, or even the next couple of decades, it would have to be something that was inspired, at least as I see it, by forces working within America, because America has basically, I mean, America built the Soviet Union. Everything that they had, everything that they knew, came from us, initially, and there was a lot of propaganda around the Soviet Empire that it was this, you know, great mighty empire, and of course when communism began to collapse there and the wall came down, we realized that they weren't nearly as advanced as we had thought they were.
Can you hold that thought, and we'll be back, and you just hang on there, Nathan.
Yes.
We'll be glad to talk to you in a moment. And again, let me put out our telephone number. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Chris Pinto. On the line is Nathan. Go ahead, finish your thoughts there, Chris.
Well, we were talking about talking to Nathan about Nathan had suggested this a Russian invasion of both Israel and the United States, and we talked about how an attack upon Israel is certainly mentioned in the Bible, but as far as the United States is concerned, and I was commenting how the United States, how it was powers and companies and money coming from the United States that built up the Soviet Empire. And so how, you know, how would our own creation then come and invade us? Now, it's certainly possible, but I think a more likely scenario, at least from the stuff that I've studied, is that some kind of a fifth column army, you know, a standing army within the boundaries of the U.S. would somehow or other take power as a kind of police force. And there have been a number of stories and reports and articles and so on about foreign troops being trained on American soil, Russian troops, German troops. Tex Mars, in one of his videos, pulls out an article about Luftwaffe flying over, I think it's somewhere in Arizona. And so we've got foreign troops that have been training on American soil for years, and people have asked the question, what are they training for? And, you know, what's wrong with the dirt back in their country? Can't they go do push-ups and, you know, run whatever, you know, exercises they need to do in their part of the world? Why do they have to come here for that? And the suggestion, you know, Tex Mars shows in one of his videos how they had sent out a questionnaire, I think it was to the U.S. Marines some years ago, asking them how they would feel about firing upon American citizens. The U.S. Marines... Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.